Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
I came from a generation that you just did things because coaches told you to. If a coach wanted you to run this zone, I wasn't questioning that. Okay, I'm just doing it because they're the head coach. We all want to win, and it's a trust level that we just gave coaches. That's my era. You have to earn kids' trust now.
Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership on risingcoaches.com. All right, welcome back to another edition of the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm Adam Gordon, joined here today by the Dallas Wings assistant coach, former WNBA star, Crystal Robinson. Crystal, what's up? How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm doing good.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you being on here with us today. Tell us how's, you were in the bubble in Bradenton. How's the off season treating you? What have you been doing to keep yourself busy?
You know what the off season is like for pro coaches. You just evaluate last year. You try to cover up holes and gaps. You try to make moves and add pieces and subtract pieces and, you know, getting ready for the draft. Those are just the things that's kind of going on in the WNBA right now.
Good, good. Are you enjoying the time off, or are you like chomping at the bit, ready to get back?
Well, I think every assistant coach enjoys some time off because when you're in season, it's just a lot of work. I think very few people, when you get to a certain level, really understand that probably 15% of your job is on the court. Most of it's done in the film room, or you're making scouting reports, or you're doing some office work that requires a lot of time and attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it hasn't been all downtime for you because you wrote a book as well I think is coming out soon.
I didn't actually write the book now. I actually wrote the book in my downtime in Europe a long time ago. I wrote the book as a player. And I didn't sit down to write a book, Adam. I actually sat down to write about my feelings. It actually was a journal that turned into a book. And then I struggled with whether I was going to ever publish it or not, and just finally came to a point in my life and met some people that kind of encouraged me to share my story. And that's kind of how everything turned into a book.
So, oh, wow. Okay. So how long ago, how many years ago was it that you actually sat down and wrote it?
I was in Italy, so it would probably have been in 2002.
Okay. Okay.
2003, 2004, something like that. It's been a long time ago.
So it's been how many times over the last 15 years have you like picked it up and been like, man, maybe I should do it. Maybe I should put it out there.
Lots of times I thought about it, you know, and just, you know, I think that through sports and, you know, all the ways that I've been blessed, I think for me, I've always thought about how am I going to impact lives? How am I going to give back? Because I've been given so much. I don't think we're put here just to take. You know, at some point you have to give back. And the most influential person in my life, aside of my family and close friends, was my high school coach, my college coach, and the coaches in my life. And I feel real fortunate to have had the opportunity to do exactly what I wanted to do, because very few people grow up and say, I want to be a basketball coach, or I want to be a lawyer, a doctor, and actually life circumstances usually take you off that path. So I feel blessed.
Yeah. Well, the book is called Finding Myself. It's a memoir. When does it release? It's not out yet, correct?
No, it's real soon. Spring 2021. The ebook's probably is going to be out next week. We just shoring up, making sure there's absolutely no mistakes in the book, and it's doing really good on pre-read from people. So it'll be out real soon. But the hardback is going to be out in spring of 2021. The ebook will be out next week.
Okay, cool. Well, I do want to talk about basketball. I want to talk about your coaching career. But before we do that, I do want to kind of address some of the things you talk about in the book. You go into detail about your childhood and growing up, and you faced a lot of adversity and some challenges. I think you grew up, you know, you grew up poor. You grew up dealing with some abuse, both, you know, mentally, sexually, a lot of adversity. Was sports kind of like an escape for you, or was that just something you found like any other kid?
It was definitely an escape for me. Sports gave me the ability to take all of my frustrations out in a very positive way. Like, instead of drinking or cutting myself, I would every time I faced somebody, I just thought, I'm about to score 35 points on you. I'm gonna play as hard as I possibly can. And when I'm done, I'm gonna be spent with energy. And that's just kind of how I played basketball. And I played with a chip on my shoulder because I played from a place of just frustration sometimes.
And was it just basketball, or was it other sports? Were you just kind of one of those kids that was outside all the time playing whatever, or?
Yeah, I played a lot of sports, but I mean, it's so funny because I started on the boys baseball team in little leagues in the 90s, in the 80s. Went to national championships. I started at second base until I was a senior in high school and signed a letter of intent with Louisiana Tech. And they asked me to quit because they was afraid I was going to get hurt. I actually led my team in slugging percentage. Baseball was my other sport. And then I took up tennis as a 15-year-old and wound up walking on and challenging everybody at Southeast Oklahoma State. And I beat everybody but the number one and ended up playing number one doubles and number two singles. So...
Oh, wow. Are you still, do you still follow, like, do you watch baseball all the time and watching the Australian Open?
I watched baseball a lot when Ryan Sandberg and Mark Grace and Sean Dunstan and all those guys played for the Cubs. And, you know, Harry Carey was alive. I was a big Cubs fan, but I have UL Washington who played for the Kansas City Royals. He won a world championship. He played with a toothpick in his mouth. He's my cousin. We grew up, he's in the same town. He's older than me, but he also won four as a hitting instructor for the Boston Red Sox. So I have a very sports oriented family. I have several professional athletes in different sports in my family. So we just kind of grew up loving sports. And I think that just the acceptance and the camaraderie that you get as a sports person and as a team gives you a family. And then when you are a person, and I would like to say, first of all, I feel like the things that I went through in life are more common than most people think. Just nobody talks about it. Everybody sweeps it under the rug and nobody wants to address those things. But I'm not the only basketball player that's a pro athlete. Probably a great percentage of us come from meek backgrounds. So I don't feel like I'm anything special. I just feel like I was brave enough to tell my story because I feel like if I do it, more people will do it and they would see that they're not alone. So that's really why I wrote the book and I put it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And very, very brave of you, and kudos to you for doing that, because you also go into depth about depression and, you know, encounters with suicidal thoughts. And you really go into detail about that during your teenage years. What kind of pulled you out of that? You know, what was going on at that point? How did that kind of mold you?
Probably two things. My biggest fight was religion. I grew up in the Bible Belt, you know, trying to accept myself in different ways and trying to figure out my way around that. I think that coaches, you know, like I said, in basketball, you feel stronger and you feel more confident when you're around people that are like you, you know, that they're going through the same things that you're going through. And you know, in this world, whether you like it or not, we're all different. We're all not going to be alike. We're not all going to have the same ways. And I think that when it just looks like it's two or three people sprinkled here, but when the numbers get huge, you know, people have to listen and you have to adjust some of your ways of thinking, at least come to the table and talk. And I think it's significant because there's so many basketball players just like me that I figured it out on my own. I had no one to turn and talk to or no guidance. So I think that it's a great discussion for a lot of people on both sides. So.
Absolutely. Did you know, like, at what age did you know that you wanted to, like, eventually coach? Or did you not deal with that until you were done playing?
Yeah, well, my dad, I think I got a Nerf basketball goal when I was about 5 years old. And I tore that thing up and they taped it up. And I fell in love with basketball instantaneously. And I just set out to be, found the best player I knew. And I challenged him every day until I could beat him. He was my gauge. And I knew from a very early age. And then when I went to high school, at Atoka High School, I met Phil Daniel, who just passed away, was my high school coach. He and his family taught me so much about not just basketball, just sacrifice and different things. I shot 750 to 1,000 shots every day, even if his wife cooked dinner and brought their whole family to the gym so I could do the things I needed to do. They made so many sacrifices for me to be great. And I just feel like the way I live my life and the way I give back is paying it forward.
So did you know, like, at that age that when you were done playing, you were going to, you know, follow in your coach's footsteps, or were you just worried about hooping?
No, absolutely. I'm going to say that I knew I wanted to be a coach, but I didn't want to be, I wanted to be a coach, one, to be a figure to help people, but also too, like, if you're just a natural born competitor, you're just a natural born competitor. And being in coaching is just another way, you know, as a player, once you achieve a certain level, you're looking for the next thing that's going to get your competitive juices flowing. Being a coach is completely different from being a player. You can't get out there and do it. You have to psychologically convince them all how to do it together. And it's a whole different piece of a puzzle that involves a whole lot of emotional intelligence that I just learned about. And I think that's what makes me a really good coach, because I have the ability to go as an assistant coach. I learned so much, because when players are unhappy and coaches are unhappy, I have a very good way to bridge that gap, to get each side to come to the table and understand that, because I've done this at a high level and I've literally coached from the third grade all the way to the pros. And I think it just made me a much more better, much more listening coach. I think every coach should have to coach third and fourth graders. It teaches you not to scream and yell, because you'll never get your point across and they'll never understand you.
Yeah, that's great, great insight, because that comes up in every season with every team. It becomes, you know, like this, there's all, even the best teams, there's always like moments of like the players versus the coach, and there's yeah, a conflict there. And you think your experience, like dealing with youth basketball, really helps
definitely,
and emotional intelligence?
Yes, because with kids, you can't get mad. Like, to get them to do the things you want them to do, you have to be able to communicate with them in a way that makes them, one, feel safe enough to do the things you ask them, two, feel good about themselves. There's so many ways you have to think about coaching a kid that you don't think about an adult. But if you coach kids, you realize how you get the best out of them. And it ain't by screaming and yelling at them. And I know that when you coach at a higher level, there is room and place for that. But for me, I learned that when I was a young coach, I lived with a headache because I screamed and yelled all the time. I couldn't understand, why can't y'all do this? You know, we've done it 1,000 times in a row now. But everybody learns completely different. And finding those things out, once I lose my frustration and I'm impatient, at that point, I'm dumping that on the team. For me, practice is for times for yelling when you need to, but games are times for problem solving. So, and everybody coaches different. I don't belittle or berate any coach in their style. It's not my job. I'm only speaking for me and how I feel that it works best for me and how I deal with players. If you would ask the head coaches that I've coached for, I've done a pretty good job, and probably I get hired more for my problem solving skills than anything. Not that I'm not a good coach. I always get sucked into dealing with all the problems because
Do you feel like today's generation of player, or just today's generation, deals with adversity and learning different than, you know, some of the previous generations?
Absolutely. I came from a generation that you just did things because coaches told you to. If a coach wanted you to run this zone, I wasn't questioning that. Okay, I'm just doing it because they're the head coach. We all want to win, and it's a trust level that we just gave coaches. That's my era. You have to earn kids' trust now, and you almost have to speak their language. And if you don't speak their language and they don't trust you, it's very hard to be successful, and they'll make all your hair turn gray. But it's about building personal relationships. I can't remember the exact quote, but I saw a quote that said something along the lines of people follow the people who they have these connections with. You're more likely to get people to follow you. Like, kids today don't do things just because you tell them to. Their curiosity is so much different. You have to almost convince them why they should do it, especially at a higher level. And then it's all the other factors that come in. Everybody wants to be great, getting them to buy into their roles and understanding that they can't be 5 superstars, but you're still as valuable as a superstar. And I'm honest with players. I'll ask a player that comes to me with that, if they have a problem with the highest score, I'll just put them in a position and say, do you think you can score 30 points tonight? Or do you think you can carry that load realistically?
How do you handle those conversations if they do think that you can do that?
Oh, I'm going to give them a chance to prove it. I'll work hard with the head coach to give you your opportunities. When those opportunities come and you don't take advantage of them, the only person you can do is look in the mirror at yourself. I don't want to hear anything else about you not getting a fair chance. When you get your minutes, if it's 5 minutes or if it's 7 minutes or if it's 20 minutes and you're over here sulking because she's getting to play, you're going to miss your opportunity. And I don't have any sympathy for that. We have to be ready for opportunities when we come. The only thing I can tell you is I can give you an opportunity. I can't make you a promise that I can't keep. Now it's up to you to do your part.
For sure.
So I have deep communication with players to try to get them to understand some of those things. And I think one of the biggest things at pro women's is so young that men really understand is that this is my career. It's up to me to make it go. And no one feels sorry for me. And it's a business. So if you're not getting the time that you want, you better earn it. No one has time for you to sulk or cry on the side. When I'm going to war, I'm not taking the crybabies with me. I'm taking the fighters. So get ready when your time comes to be your best.
Absolutely. So. And I love it. And like you said, I'm sure before those honest conversations happen, first is the developing the relationship. Where you can, exactly. They can let you talk to them like that.
That's time consuming, getting to know, like, especially in the pros. I have a kid, I had 2 Muslim girls on my team, Satu and Astu. So they're both Muslim. Like, we're so different and we come to so many different, I cannot address Satu the same way I can address Rika. Her religion is so different in how she's going to respond to how I react to her. A bunch of cussing and yelling and screaming at a Muslim girl is not going to be effective. So I have to adjust my coaching style. And I think some of the great coaches like Gino doesn't have to really adjust his coaching style. His organization recruits itself. The greats are going to go play for him because Gino yelling at them is the least of their worries. They're chasing greatness and they're going to pay whatever price they have to pay it to get it. Very few people have the emotional capacity to play for Gino. So the great players, you don't really have to recruit them. They're going to come there because they know what's going to happen.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, is it a little different at the pro level? Because you're not recruiting. You're coaching who management gives you, right?
Yeah. Well, you have a lot of say in who you're drafting and who you're picking, but money completely changes the game. Like, completely changes the game. You have a lot of say in who you're controlling and picking, but, you know, when it boils down to it, people are getting paid because of their stats. If you elevate it, it's because of how you do, how well you perform. So everybody's chasing dollars. Everybody's chasing dreams. It's just a lot more to overcome. Everybody wants to have their name in the lights. Everybody wants those things. But understanding that, get that championship and everybody's names will be in the light. I'll give you a great example. Alicia Clark is not the biggest name on the Seattle Storm's team. Sue Bird, Breonna Stewart, Jewel Lloyd, but she's the glue. She was the glue to those championship teams. She's probably the most efficient player in the WNBA, but nobody writing articles about that. They're writing articles about, you have to have emotional intelligence to know what your self-worth is as a player. And that's how I try to separate players from comparing themselves. What's your self-worth? You're a great shooter. Be great at that. Now, don't stop improving the other attributes, but if you have six open shots, you should make five of them every time. That's how I coach players. So,
well, since you mentioned the Storm, I was going to save this for later, but you brought them up, so I got to get to it now. You spent time with them, what, in 18, 19, I believe?
We won championship.
Separated, like, what set their culture apart from every other team that you've been a part of?
And just quite simply, I'm a big fan, but Sue, the way Sue is, her leadership ability, the ability to bring people together and get them to not focus on all of the stuff around is amazing. And the organization is really, really, they support those women 3,000%. They give them everything that they need, but not in a spoiling way. Like, those business women have done their due diligence and work their butt off to build that program into what it is. And they have set a standard there of greatness and high integrity and a lot of different things that that I really, really appreciate. To me, they're like the San Antonio Spurs of the WNBA, because if you don't fit their culture, you can't be there. They're not a win at all costs people. Like, you have to fit the culture, but it's really hard not to win with the culture that they have, because everybody only cares about winning. That's it. They don't care who gets the credit. If Jewel Lloyd has a 50-point night, Breonna Stewart doesn't feel threatened. She's her biggest fan. Emotional intelligence. That's the difference. It starts with her, and it starts with Sue Bird. That's where it starts with. And Sue does not allow people. If you come into there and if you just come in their locker room and you're on some different stuff that ain't about going in the direction they're going, you won't be there long. You'll probably get traded in the season. They don't even let that stuff in their bubble at all.
What do you think comes first when trying to build a culture and you don't have that? I mean, they've got the rings and the proven.
They didn't always have that, though. Remember, right. they lost for a long time before they got to that. But they had to build the culture. But everybody adheres to the culture. That's what's consistent in Seattle. People adhere to the organizational culture, not the coaching culture. The coach better adhere to the organizational culture. That's the difference. I'm going to say a difference between, say, in my opinion, this is strictly my opinion, that's the difference between Dallas Wings and Seattle Storm. It has nothing to do with talent. Dallas is talented. They're young. But as the coaches come in to Dallas, and there's been a lot of coaches changes, the players adhere to that coach's culture. So if that coach leaves, next catch comes, the culture changes. So it's an ever-changing culture. It's not a consistent culture. There's no culture up at the head. Seattle, the coach better stay to the culture, or the coach is going to be gone, because all the players are adhering to the culture of Seattle. So to me, that's in pros, those are the differences in organizations. It's not always talent. That's just a little bitty difference. And the difference is that every team. So I'm going to use Enrique as an example. When Enrique is a free agent, every team can offer her the same amount of money. They can all offer her a max salary. But what sets you apart? Why do I want to come play for you? And it's going to be your culture. It's going to be why I'm treated, how I'm treated. It's not just going to be for a salary. And I think you see it play out in free agency right now. The teams that have great cultures, the free agents are flocking to them. The teams that have horrible cultures, they're not announcing any free agents.
Right, right. Yeah, you even see people, especially like in the men's game, taking pay cuts to go get to organizations that, you know, like the Spurs, like the Warriors.
Yeah, because the culture is so important. If the culture is not right, you're not winning a championship. That's the reason why. Do you remember, Kevin Garnett with the T-Wolves? Mm-hmm. I bet you if you went back and done some, or they got to the Eastern Conference Finals every year, and they just could never get over that hump.
Right.
What was it? It ain't talent. They're the same. Every year they get a little bit better. Those are outside things that, to me, that you play for from a heart. Like, and I'm going to give you a good example. Like UConn. those girls play for that name on their chest. They are going to run through walls to keep UConn great. You still have a semblance of that in the pros. But the people who think that everything's about money, they miss the point. Players need a little bit of more to play for. Passion. I told you I became great because I had all this turmoil inside of me that I needed to take my aggression out. That's why I became great. It's not because I just really want to get out there and practice basketball. If you understand what I'm saying, it's a passion that drove me to it. The culture is the passion that drives. It's the driver. It's the engine.
Okay, let's get back to your playing days. You're giving me great segues, by the way. That's why I appreciate it. Tell us about your WNBA days, like some of the best battles you had and some of the best mentors. And who did you learn from and what did you learn?
I learned a lot. Probably the two biggest mentors I had in basketball, I would say would be Vicky Johnson and Teresa Weatherspoon. When I went to New York, I could score. It's known as a scorer, but all the commentators, like, I could so tired of hearing Carolyn Peck's country voice talk about how bad of a defender I was, you know, and some of those guys. And I wasn't really not a good defender. They were right. But by the fourth year in the WNBA, after just me grabbing Spoon and VJ and worrying them to death, I became the best defender on our team. And it was a good and a bad thing because Richie asked me to not be the second option on scoring. He asked me to be the fourth option so I could guard Cynthia Cooper or Cyril Swoops or those guys, knowing that we had a whole strategy against them. It wasn't to stop them from getting our points. It was to make them shoot five or six extra shots so we could take some shots from Tina Thompson or something along those lines. But biggest battles was definitely Cynthia Cooper, Cyril Swoops, Tina Thompson, Lisa Leslie. Those guys were just... terrorize me. I probably still have nightmares about those comments. I can't even see Cynthia and she smiles at me and my stomach starts hurting, but that's one of my favorite people.
That's awesome. How have you seen the game change, you know, from your playing days to now?
I guess that to me, I don't know how to say this to make it sound the best. I really wish that the younger players, like, it's heartbreaking and baffling to me. I have a 17-year-old nephew that reclassified as an 11th grader and went to Texas A&M. If you ask him who Iceman George Gervin is, he knows. If you ask him basketball history, he knows. Girls, I can ask girls in college, name five players in the WNBA at your position, and they can't do it. They don't watch basketball. So... they like to play it, but they don't watch it. That's the difference in their era. We were complete students of the game, I feel like. And I feel like I really earned all the things that I got. We built the league and they come in and they have all this stuff there, but they're the resources that they have. They really need to look back at their history so they understand how hard it was for us. And don't forget how hard it was. It was just 20 years ago, and that's really, really early. That's not very much time in the pro world. So I wish that they would look back. Like, it's to me, if our sport's going to grow, I can't ask a college senior to name five players of your position in the WNBA and you're going to get drafted and you don't know.
Right.
That's embarrassing. I can't even take you serious. Like, if I'm as a pro coach, if I ask you that and you don't know, I'm probably not going to draft you.
Right.
Because you're already telling me right now, I'm going to have to push you and pull you all the time for you to be effective to the point I want you to be. And I don't want a coach effort.
I love it.
Does that make sense?
You want that passion. You want that passion out of your athletes.
I want that passion. So if I got to ask you and you don't know who five, you don't watch basketball enough. So I'm going to have to teach you. You're behind the eight ball already.
Right. I want to ask you too about, the beginning of your coaching career. I think you spent a season with the Mystics, but then you coached high school ball 2 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you coached high school ball. Then you coached junior college. You really kind of worked your way up, you know, even though you probably had those connections and relationships I'm sure you probably could have stayed at the high level. You really kind of, you know, went back to not the bottom of the ladder or anything. It's basketball's basketball, but you know what I mean? You went back
Yeah, everything I did for a reason. Like, I didn't go back to that because I had to. I coached in W with Tree for 2 years. Tree lost his job. And then I looked for a job. I actually had no intentions of coaching high school, but a high school about 45 miles away from where I lived at, where my mom lives at, their coach quit a week before school started. So I have a good friend in that town. He called me and was like, hey, you're not coaching. They need a coach over here. I ended up taking that job, and we had lost the best player in the state that year, and we won state. We lost 30 points a game and won state the next year. Nobody thought we could. So the next year, I actually took a junior college coaching job during that year, during that season. I was coaching both of them. And in December, I started coaching Murray State. And then I finished up at McAllister, and I went to Murray State. But I took that job to help a friend out, actually, not because I was going to coach high school. So then I coached at Murray State for 4 years, and Jerry Finkbeiner hired me, a guy from Oklahoma who, when I played in the NAIA, he beat me twice in the WNBA. Back-to-back years, I lost by 1 point, same exact score to the same person, back-to-back years. He ends up hiring me to be assistant at Utah State. I go work for him, and right off the bat, I wasn't even there a month and a half, and I realized our integrity, our missions weren't the same. I knew in 3 months into the coaching there that I wasn't going to stay there. When you're a college coach, you're dealing in people's most precious commodities, and it's their kids. If I'm going to recruit a kid to a place and I'm telling them something, it has to be honest and it has to be true. And if it's not, then it's not for me. And I don't care if I've been working there for 3 months, 2 months, I do not stay at jobs where we don't align in certain ways. Reagan Peebly hired me at TCU. I leave and I go to TCU, and my mom got sick, and my dad had passed away unexpectedly a year and a half before that. My mom had gotten sick, and I actually quit TCU to go home and take care of my mother, because both of my sisters have really high up corporate jobs, and it was not conducive for them and their kids. So it was me, and I don't have kids. So I ended up taking a grade school coaching job there because I had to be there. I just actually moved on when I took the Dallas job, actually. So, but that's kind of the trajectory. But the jobs I took for reasons. It wasn't because I was like, ooh, I'm going to go do this. No, just circumstances in life put me there, which is just a path, I think, that was for me. I'm so grateful and thankful for the fact that I was that guy to coach third and fourth graders. It made me a much better coach.
What translates as a coach, regardless of level?
I think that, shoot, you can be a coach. Like, I'm coaching my brothers. They're not that smart. I'm coaching them every day. So you have to clarify that, what you mean. I'm sorry.
Like, what as a player, if you play hard, no matter if you're playing in middle school or in the pros, like, that's going to translate. If you rebound, yeah, that's going to translate. What are those things as a coach?
That you coach at that level?
Yeah, matter what level you're at, you walk into any gym in the country, if you do these things as a coach.
Those things, the intangibles. To me, the intangibles is, and if kids don't learn the intangibles at a young age, like, for me, I coached high school girls all the way down, so I was in control of all of the grade school coaches and what they taught and what they didn't teach. Like, in my third and fourth grade courses, I don't care about winning and losing. At that age, we care about building love for the game. I care about teaching them the intangibles, diving on loose balls, like why you do those things. Like, those things are instilled early. When they miss those things, and so you start asking them to do that stuff in the seventh and eighth grade, they're looking at you like crazy. But if you start instilling it in the third, fourth grade, it's just a part of the game and a part of who they are. It's all about what you teach. I'm a big believer in, you can't yell at kids about things that they don't know or that you haven't taught them yet. So
all your teams are going to be playing hard and they're going to love the game.
My teams, sometimes you can just play harder than other teams and win. Yeah. That's the truth. And most of the teams that I have built and coached as a head coach, I have taken really hardworking players and really, really good shooters and beat a lot of people just because we outwork them and we're smart. And I'm a big key on smart players. To each his own. You're really, really lucky if you have really athletic, really smart players. But like I told you, players today, sometimes you get them and they're super athletes, but they're skill level's not that high. And that's because they don't really put that time into it. You know what I mean? Like, it's amazing to me when I see a kid that's a sophomore that has the ability to be a high level D1 player that still can't shoot a left-handed layup. I would be embarrassed. It doesn't bother them today. Air balls. When I played, shooting the air ball is like the worst thing in the world. They shoot air balls a day and they laugh about it and run off. Like, those kind of things burn me up. Like, as a competitor, I would be killing myself. Like, I'm too competitive for that. And I'm probably overly competitive, my players would say.
What's next for you, Crystal, in your coaching career? Obviously, you're with the Wings now, but.
Yeah, well, what's next for me is I'm probably looking to get on a book tour. I love coaching. Coaching has been, you know, my world, but I think that there's so many ways to impact basketball. And it might not be on the coach on the floor with X's and O's for me. Like, I think that there's some knowledge and some gaps out there for women and girls in sports and basketball that I think my book can really close and help. I'm putting a lot of time and energy into this, to the book right now, and we'll see where things go from there.
Well, the book is called Find Myself. Make sure you guys check it out. Available on ebook shortly. Where can they go? Where can they check in?
It'll be
that?
On all platforms. They'll be able to get it on all platforms. Amazon. They'll be able to pick it up anywhere.
So again, it's called Finding Myself, a memoir by Crystal Robinson. And look out for the paperback and hardback coming in the spring of 2021.
Well, thank you, Adam. Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it. Take care, Crystal.
I do too. Okay, you take care as well. Bye.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's LUCEO sports.com.